Hey, all you listeners, before we jump into the podcast, I'd like to take care of a couple legal issues and a little forbearance of what you're about to listen to. Some podcasts are somewhat explicit and touch on some harsh topics when it comes to the mental health field. Listener discretion is advised. Also, for the legal purposes and the protection of our show and guests, we'd like to also remind you that all these stories that are shared by everyone on air are alleged events that have occurred. Please keep that in mind. And again, we enjoy having you here. So welcome and enjoy the show.
But I don't want to be an emperor. That's not my business. I don't want to rule or conquer anyone. I should like to help everyone if possible. Jew, Gentile, black man, white. We all want to help one another. Human beings are like that. We want to live by each other's happiness, not by each other's misery. We don't want to hate and despise one another. In this world, there's room for everyone, and the good earth is rich and can provide for everyone. The way of life can be free and beautiful, but we have lost the way. Greed has poisoned men's souls, has barricaded the world with hate, has goose-stepped us into misery and bloodshed. We have developed speed, but we have shut ourselves in. Machinery that gives abundance has left us in want. Our knowledge has made us cynical, our cleverness hard and unkind. We think too much and feel too little. More than machinery, we need humanity. More than cleverness, we need kindness and gentleness. Without these qualities, life will be violent, and all will be lost. The aeroplane and the radio have brought us closer together. The very nature of these inventions cries out for the goodness in men, cries out for universal brotherhood, for the unity of us all. Even now, my voice is reaching millions throughout the world, millions of despairing men, women, and little children, victims of a system that makes men torture and imprison innocent people. To those who can hear me, I say, do not despair. The misery that is now upon us is but the passing of greed, the bitterness of men who fear the way of human progress. The hate of men will pass, and dictators die, and the power they took from the people will return to the people. And so long as men die, liberty will never perish. Soldiers, don't give yourselves to brutes, men who despise you, enslave you, who regiment your lives, tell you what to do, what to think, and what to feel, who drill you, diet you, treat you like cattle, use you as cannon fodder. Don't give yourselves to these unnatural men, machine men with machine minds and machine hearts. You are not machines. You are not cattle. You are men. You have the love of humanity in your hearts. You don't hate. Only the unloved hate. The unloved and the unnatural. Soldiers, don't fight for slavery. Fight for liberty. In the 17th chapter of St. Luke it is written, the kingdom of God is within man. Not one man nor a group of men, but in all men, in you. You, the people, have the power. The power to create machines. The power to create happiness. You, the people, have the power to make this life free and beautiful. To make this life a wonderful adventure. Then in the name of democracy, let us use that power. Let us all unite. Let us fight for a new world. A decent world. That will give men a chance to work, that will give youth a future and old age a security. By the promise of these things, brutes have risen to power. But they lie. They do not fulfill that promise. They never will. Dictators free themselves, but they enslave the people. Now let us fight to fulfill that promise. Let us fight to free the world, to do away with national barriers, to do away with greed, with hate and intolerance. Let us fight for a world of reason. A world where science and progress will lead to all men's happiness. Soldiers, in the name of democracy, let us all unite!
Come on in. Come on in. Welcome to the show. Welcome to the podcast. Spread hope like fire. I invite all of you to come in, relax, settle in. This is the inaugural video YouTube podcast edition If you're listening at home or on the road on Apple or Google, Stitcher or Spotify and other major podcast carriers, I encourage you to go to YouTube and Google, or not Google, but search Spread Hope Like Fire, the podcast, because this is how I think I'm going to start doing a lot of the podcasting, is having guests on and getting myself out of this bubble that I've been in for the past over a year. COVID has been crazy for me. And it's just, it's something that screwed with my mind. And I think I grew a lot during COVID. And so with that being said, I'm going to keep it short and simple. My guest today is my good friend, Andrew Camacho. I've known Andrew for quite a long time, and we just spent some time catching up with each other and just talking about what we've been up to during COVID, how we both handled it. But before we get into that, I want to take care of some business. I have some sponsors for the show, new sponsorship. And so I'm going to throw it over to one of our sponsors right now.
Optimal Interventions. We provide counseling and psychotherapy. During this COVID-19 crisis, we are providing counseling and psychotherapy through telehealth. For those of you who are not familiar with telehealth, this is where we do therapy through video conferencing. It can be just as effective as face-to-face. If you want to set up an appointment for counseling, please call 805-202-9335. That's 805-202-9335. This is actually the director's phone line, but he will assure that your message will be transferred over to the administrative assistant, who will find an appropriate therapist for you. Take care, stay safe, and hope to actually see you in the office someday soon.
Again, it's great to have everybody here. I hope to continuously do the YouTube portion of it. It's been super hard for me to get this out there because literally I've been up since 3 o'clock. I had a killer migraine last night, and I went to bed early. Normally I sleep like 4 hours, 4 to 5 hours. I slept about 7. So I'm feeling a lot better actually now. And with that being said, it's been great to finally get this going. I've done so many interviews this week with different people, and I've missed a lot of people. I know our schedules didn't match up for some reason, but we're still going to get everybody together. At least I'm trying to get everybody together with me so that I can have different views, different guests, different things to talk about. I'm pulling out all the stops on this podcast. It's no longer to a degree. It is mental health. That is the core fundamental part of this podcast. Mental health, destigmatizing it, but also just talking about it, talking about being human. That's the number one thing in my practice that I always see, is that there is a struggle within our society of being human, because being human means one thing: pain. We have to experience it, but unfortunately that's part of life, and pain is what helps us grow. So I'd like to throw it over to Andrew and me, and I hope you guys enjoy. Thank you, and I'll see you right after the interview. So we have our first inaugural guest back on Spread Hope Like Fire. I would like to welcome a good friend of mine, Andrew. Welcome to the show.
How's it going, Tony?
It's going, buddy. It's nice to have you on. It's nice to finally kind of have interaction with people outside of work. It's crazy. How have you been holding up with the pandemic and stuff?
I've been good. Really healthy. First and foremost, me and my family have been healthy. My kids have been good. Health-wise, it's definitely different. I think, like, my oldest, he's gone through this little bit of a transition of being kind of outgoing and now like a total introvert, which is interesting. But other than that, I think things have been good. Health-wise, work has been the same. Luckily, I've I'm still working. So that's a big thing and a big blessing, because I know some people don't or aren't, or have lost their jobs or whatever the case may be. I'm fortunate enough to still have that and have something other than just staying at home, like probably like you have been for the last year, like you said, year and 3 months.
This is, I think, month 14 that I'm on, where I work from home. So all the viewers and listeners, this is my home office, I guess. And so I've transitioned piss poorly, I think, into working from home, because so if I do have any listeners, the way I do therapy is I only dress from, like, if on camera from here up, like, so I put a nice shirt on, I comb my hair, you know, and I'm in like shorts and flip flops. So it's like I'm hosting the news, and I'm not doing, like, I went and bought a printer. I took about 3 days to figure out how to print on it and connect it. It's crazy. It's, my TV broke. I had to buy it. It's like everything started breaking during pandemic, and I was trying to figure out how do I get certain things that I need without going to the, it was weird. I don't know. So I got the TV from Costco, and that, I think that was my last venture in there. And that was like almost a year ago.
Yeah, so, with like my line of work, what I've been seeing, I do in-home consultations, so a lot of technologically things, like people that want them, I visit people's homes and kind of let them know what my recommendations are for what they want, whether it's a TV, appliances, or anything like that. So that's one of the biggest things, really. There's been a huge need for technology, and then within the first like few weeks of the whole shutdown, like, we were sold out of laptops, sold out of printers, sold out of webcams, sold out of like everything that people are using now. And it's been crazy, like, how much people have needed to rely on technology. And I'm even seeing it now where people haven't been doing their vacations and they're investing in their home, whether it be appliances or home theater stuff. I've been selling a bunch of stuff. So that hasn't slowed down, luckily, but yeah, there's a huge need. Like, people are realizing there's problems wrong with their setups and they want them new or fixed.
Oh, okay. Well, that's me right there in a nutshell. I needed all this crap, and eventually I got it. And, you know,
it's probably hard to get a hold of at first.
Yeah. I had to go to Slow for the printer. I had to go to Slow and Costco and Slow to get the TV. A nice TV though. I mean,
yeah,
I wrote it off for tax purposes. And so, but they're anyways,
the Target TVs.
I know, right? Not the Target TVs. Me and Andrew went to school together, and then we ended up working together at Target. And man, that was one of the best jobs, at least for me. I don't get that sentiment from too many other people, that this is the best place, one of the best places to work. How did you feel about working there?
I was with Target for 14 years? No, 13 years. So I did a lot. The company is a decent company. The stores really dictate how things can be, like, because I had an amazing time in Slow opening up that store when I left Santa Maria. I had an amazing time at Buena Park, you know, and then when I came back to Santa Maria, that's when I kind of disliked it a little, but I've met some awesome people along the way, and a lot of people that I can really point to and say, like, I'm at where I'm at professionally because of them. It's one thing Target does do, is it does develop you. I know, like, you've seen me run, kind of go up through the ranks and do all this other stuff with Target, you know. It does prepare you to be professional. I wouldn't be where I'm at today without Target. So I have my professional career to like point to them and say, like, hey, that they're the reason. And a lot of the people that took the time to invest in me development wise, like, you know, I can't thank them enough. But company wise, I mean, it's an okay company. The people really make the company though. The people and leaders in that building. Yeah. I mean, I know we've had conversations before about, like, man, this leader doesn't get it, or this leader doesn't want to do anything about things. So really, you know, leadership can have a big impact on that, on people. So people don't have a great time, it's usually because of specific leaders or specific people. Like, it's pretty crazy to think that. I mean, I talked to Tina a couple days before her last.
Tina's a mutual friend of ours. Just to clear things up.
a good old Target person as well.
Yeah, she's a hard ass though. I mean, I love Tina. Tina, if you're listening, I love you to death.
Tina's awesome.
Tina's the best. Tina and Carlos are the best.
And my last stint with Target, my last 3 years we worked together and it was kind of the same thing, me and her. Like we got it. We knew kind of where we stood and we both, I think, got fed up with the way things were. And I mean, I moved on. I'm happier about it. I'm happier about my professional area and what I'm doing. I love what I do. I'm going to talk about technology all day. So.
That's going to be, well, not fun for me. Talking is the fun part for me. Yeah. It's crazy to see how all of us kind of like grew up. Like even a mutual friend of me and Anders, our Anders and I is Noe. He's doing computer something. He's doing something with computer coding. He's doing coding.
Yeah. Yeah. I know he went back to school for it and everything, but it's funny because, you know, to think back to 2006, 2007, well, now like 2010 around there, I think we all were kind of working all together. And just to see it, like, I mean, I used to roll to work on a longboard. and like I go in and I see all of us younger kids, like either trying to figure out what we're doing or like trying to figure out college or anything like that, and just kind of, you know, commuting at this night job where we closed and didn't take anything serious. And now it's funny to see how far we've all come.
I'll share a story with you about Tina, and Tina, if you're listening, forgive me, but when I say she's a hard ass, so when I went through my breakup back in, what is it, like 2009, 2010, or one of those years, I was so devastated, right? Mm-hmm. It broke my heart. It was my first heartbreak. And what I meant about Tina is when I went through my breakup, I'm standing in guest service doing, like, working, right? Or trying to. And I am just devastated. I'm crying and I'm doing returns. And I think somebody went and complained about me crying while I'm doing their return. And I wasn't working. I'm just standing there, like, just, I'm just crying. And all of a sudden here comes little Tina. Tony, what are you doing? And I'm like, what? And she's like, you better get to work. And she's like, are you crying? And I'm like, no, no, no. She's like, you're crying. Are you serious? She's like, you can't do this outside of work. Like, she's like, if you keep crying, I'm going to take you in the office. I'm going to write you up. And I'm like, God, you're heartless. I'm going to break. And I laugh. I don't know. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, she had to be that hard ass on me because, you know, you can't be doing that and while you're working. I don't know. So I have a lot of stories. We have a lot of stories about Target and how we kind of grew up there, really.
Yeah. And Tina's, for those of you who don't know her, is a shorter in stature, you know, but she's,
oh yeah, she's tiny, but she can put away a house.
Yeah. She's tough though. Like she'll let you know what you need to know, how you need to know it. And you know, that's how it is. But yeah, like Tina's awesome. Like that's what I've really come like with my professional career. The people that not necessarily are the hardest on you, but are the most willing to be honest with you and have that feedback with you. Like you learn the most from, and you know, I know there's a couple of bosses that I think, man, like that dude sucked. Like he was so hard on me. He never was pleased with anything. But, you know, I look back and it's like, well, like now I have a certain quality and standard of work that if it wasn't for them, like I would be just okay with the minimum. So.
Yeah. I think that guy for me was Hollister. He was the guy that like, after I decided, like I had that Jim Halpert moment, about work and stuff, and I was like, I guess this is what I'm doing now. I'm gonna be here for the long haul. And it was, I went to him and, you know, talked to him about plans and stuff, and you know, he was a hard ass. Mm-hmm. He was nice, but he was a hard ass, and I think that's where a lot of my work ethic came from. But anyway, it was nice going down reminiscing down memory lane, and thanks for coming on the show. No, I'm kidding.
That's it.
Well, see you later. So the topics that I've been covering really have been kind of linked to current events and everything that's unfolding, but I'm linking it to other issues that I don't see anybody else talking about. And to me, that's family matters. It's how you are born into a cycle that we unfortunately get put into. A lot of the times it's like maladaptive behaviors. And for like me, I grew up with, as like the listeners know, I grew up with a drug-fueled crazy dad who, you know, instilled craziness in me. And I went on, and I think all of us to a degree find ourselves in this situation. And then we're struggling a lot too with like our interpersonal relationships with people and how do we communicate how we feel. And some people are rebuilding relationships with partners, with mothers, fathers, brothers. How are you maintaining this type of relationship in our current climate? Like, would you say, I know you shared a little bit about the things about the relationship with you and your dad and kind of rebuilding, if I'm using the right term.
Yeah. Like I know there's a lot of things. Like my dad was very present, but by phone. You know, he was, you know, I know who he is. I know his name. Growing up, I spent summers with him and things like that. So where I'd like to be with my dad, it's not there yet, but it's a constant like working towards things and a lot of talking and really just bringing out and just getting comfortable with my feelings. Like my dad's he's an awesome guy. Like everybody loves him. And he's a pastor for a church in Utah, Calvary Chapel.
Okay.
So he's a religious person. He's very devout in that. And, you know, just recently, like expressing how I saw some things or how like I saw things when I was growing up kind of started everything in motion and really being encouraged to talk to him about the way I feel. You know, which for me, it's just like, you know, hey, I see him once every couple years, you know, at some points, once every couple months at some points. And, you know, I put on this fake, hey, dad, like, you know, kind of nice to see you. And it's always nice to see him, but it's just like, kind of not necessarily like really like having my real feelings towards things or really even discussing the impact of kind of his absence had on me. But my mom, like I'm a mama's boy, man. I think we share that a lot because my mom raised me. Like my mom was there every day of the year, bad days, good days, weird days, you know, and growing up and I, like, I owe her everything. Like she's brought me up to be the man that I am. Like, I like to think since I'm a mama's boy, like I do see a lot more and I'm a lot more in tune with some of my emotions than some other like guys our age might be, because I've got in total, 5 sisters.
Oh,
and,
wow.
And 2 brothers. So like really growing up, I was around nothing but women. I was, you know, having to take care of my sisters at a young age, you know, and at some point I was looked at as, you know, a partner to my mom, but like, that's all just, you know, she did it for so long, you know, single-handedly almost. So my mom and me, like we have a really good relationship. I don't hide really anything from her. You know, she knows about everything in my past and all the good and bad. And of course, like mothers do, they love you through it all. So
that is great to hear. What is interesting that we both grew up kind of the same way with dad not being there. So for me, who taught you how to shave and stuff? Like that's, I wish I had YouTube around there, because like I struggled with that.
Yeah.
Like guy did, things, I mean.
Yeah, yeah. And I hear you on that. Like it's funny because a lot of what I know how to do now, like man-wise, like and like I say man-wise, but really like just like fixing stuff in the car or doing things like that. I've learned through doing like the property management stuff with Target. Like I'm not afraid to open up something and look to see how something works with now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like I'm already an adult at this point, but you know, a guy from Slow who trained me, like really helped me with some of that, like some of the basic stuff, like shaving, like he showed me how to do one visit. I hadn't even had that much like facial hair, but my dad showed me like, and he showed me how to like, how to drive. He taught me how to drive one summer when I was like 13, I think, before I can even get my license. But that's kind of the thing, like a lot of this stuff, like you think, you know, 16 or like when you're about to get your license, this is when you start doing stuff. But like a lot of the stuff had to be fit into like his schedule and the way he did things. And to give you like a little bit of background about it, like my dad, he spent 14 or 15 years as a missionary in the Philippines.
Oh, nice.
And he left, he'd always been out of town. Like he always lived in Vegas while I lived here in Santa Maria, or okay, even like in LA. Like, so he was always at least 4 hours, 5 hours away or more. Growing up, there was a very, very few times where we lived in the same city. But like my visits with him were about once a year until he was called to go, and be in the Philippines, and act as a missionary out there. So he left, I believe when I was in junior high. So, and I seen him for my junior high graduation. And so seeing him really, and usually those summers would be maybe a month at a time that I can see him, or, you know, if we timed it up correctly during the summer, I'd be off of school. Mm-hmm. If I wasn't off school, of course, it'd be, you know, a weekend, or a week, I'd go on independent study or something like that. But, so that when I say like my dad wasn't there, like I feel personally like that's from junior high to high school. Like that's when you're learning how to become a man. Like that's how you're learning how to not be, I mean, I was still immature, of course.
Yeah.
But you know, you're learning who you're going to be, what you want. And really like, that's the biggest character development. And, you know, when my dad wasn't there, I had, you know, my avid teacher, Jeff Cooper, who like I looked at as a father figure. Like we went on avid trips, like we did a bunch of stuff, and he was really there for me a lot of those times, and instances where I couldn't make my dad proud, or like he was just too far away to make proud, like, you know, he'd be proud of me. Like, you know, Mr. Cooper, Jeff Cooper would be really, really proud of me. You know, so like a lot of that kind of stuff, like the basic stuff I learned, yeah, from my dad. But it's, you're right, man. Like there's certain things, like, you know, popping up the hood of a car to replace headlights, doing a.
I learned that from Michael Scott. I know how to jump a battery, take off a woman's bra. It's the best.
Yeah. But yeah, like that's, and along the way, you know, I'm helping my mom raise my sisters. And, you know, I talked to you a little bit about how, you know, even though my dad wasn't there for a lot of the stuff, like I'm a dad now. I've got three kids, and really, like, I feel like in combination of in anybody's sense, without having your dad there, like, you know, you'd kind of be a mess. You really wouldn't know where to start at being a dad. You know, without having that stable person to go to and like, hey, like, how do I be a dad? Like, how do I do this? How do I do that? You know, I can go to him. I can go to my dad and talk to him and call him up and do things like that. But it's kind of that everyday thing when you're learning, you know, you're not, you know, going to stop and just be like, oh, wait, hold on. Let me kind of call my dad. So I raised my sisters. I helped my mom raise my sisters at a really young age. Like I was really, like, as cheesy as it sounds, like I was born to be a dad. You know? My mom was single. Like I had my sisters, you know, they're young, and they've told me they've considered me their dad, you know, out of everything, you know, watching them, cooking for them, cleaning up after them, them getting on my nerves and learning patience through them.
Yeah.
And, you know, and the whole time I'm 11, 12, 13, 14, you know, those prime years where like a lot of kids, those age, you know, they're worried about just, you know, video games and living life. And, you know, don't get me wrong, I played a very good my share of video games and everything like that. So
it's so different now. It yeah. is like the video yeah. game aspect too is different. Like I was watching this video of who was he? I forgot who it was, but he's like, yeah, video games are good. Like you used to fucking get ready for like the boss fight with Bowser. Like you would eat well, you would sleep well, you'd get ready, you'd invite everybody over, and you take on Bowser. Now it's just like, well, we got to save it, and you know, it's not a big deal, but games used to be the best.
Yeah,
that was my outlet.
Yeah me too. And like I think a lot of scary instances in life when you can be susceptible to drugs and peer pressure and going out and finding trouble in the small town that we live in. Like I had video games and my friends that played video games. We're all nerds.
Hey everyone. I'm just taking a quick pause right now. I'm going to hit you with some ads really quick and we'll be right back with our guest. Go Freak Media. If you're looking for comic books, if you're looking for movie reviews, if you're looking for TV show reviews, anything pop culture related, Go Freak Media. GoFreakMedia.com is a proud sponsor of Spread Hope Like Fire. Here's something that I think is interesting that you tapped into that kind of got activated in my thought process. With you not having a dad, I kind of do this still to this day. Where I have a lot of like father figures and it's weird. Like I attach to strong, I guess strong-willed men that inspire me. And it's, I get in these weird relations, not like weird sexual, but like weird relationships with men. Cause it's like, you didn't have a dad, but like older men, like I kind of like strive to be like Oli, my supervisor, he's been a mentor for years to me. And it's like, he's kind of like my dad to a degree. It's kind of weird, but like, I'm able to like write out that boundary with him. Yeah. But like school too, in junior high, I remember I latched on to my science teacher because I thought he was super cool. And he laid a lot of like knowledge on me. Or Mr. Butler. Remember Butler at Santa Maria High? Mr. Butler was the OCS teacher, for those listening that don't know. He changed my life. Out of anybody in that school, going to OCS, I think, changed my life, because like it was always like, oh, Garcia, you're back. Like, what is wrong with you? Are you stupid? And literally the last day of school, I remember him taking me aside and he's like, he said, I can't remember word for word, but it was, you know, because he always said, you know, don't end up like those knuckleheads out there, because he grew up in like the 80s, 70s and 80s. And that was like the way he talked. He was a cool guy. That's why I still listen to smooth jazz. Every time you go into OCS, that's what he played, and he would hum along, and it was good times. But he was always like, you're gonna make something of yourself. I know it, because you've proven to me that you have that will. And it was like, I wish to this day that I could tell him that. And I never can, because he passed away 10 years ago. Was it 10 years ago?
I think it was, has it been that long?
It's been a while.
I thought it was a few years after we graduated. I think because we graduated in 05, right?
I graduated 04.
You're 04? Oh, so you're older than me then. I graduated in 05. That was like a few years after I graduated when he did. But then like it's been a while.
But do you find yourself doing, I don't know if it's odd. I think it's odd because like, it's to me a little unnatural but I don't know. There's listeners out there, if you're listening, that's something to think about.
And I think for people like me and you that don't have that constant presence, like subconsciously, we're always seeking it. Whether it's some kind of knowledge to be passed down or some kind of, you know, like kind of consistency, since it's not consistent with me and you. Of a male figure in my life. So like I said, Mr. Cooper, like I see him still every so often, and we stop and talk like about things and how things are going, and really it's the genuine just care behind it, that for me, like him just being interested in who I was and developing me and mentoring me. I mean, Avid, like I was seeing him every day school wise for 3 years, to like who's a better like consistent male presence that's going to be in my life other than a teacher I'm going to have for 3 years consecutively. And not just that, but showing me along the way, like how to do things, educating me. And then we had some awesome experiences in Avid. Like we went and visited colleges, and that was of course the end game. Like you're going to, you know, this is all in hopes of going to a 4-year university, and him being there to help me, whether it be with homework or essays or anything like that. Like that's, you know, my high school days, like he was like, yeah, my father, you know, and even going on later in life, like I have an older peer of mine. When I started doing a lot of the property management stuff with Target, his name's Ron, he's an older guy, but like, you know, I'd call him up for certain things. I was talking to him almost every day because I didn't know how to do A, B, or C, or like, hey, like I'm trying to pull apart this piece of equipment, the Wave or something. And this is what it's doing. Like, where do I start? Like, how do I do this? And it's always like, yeah. Okay, look at your resources, you know, hey, do you want me to come down and we can do it together? Like, yeah, let's do that. So, for the better part of 3 years, like I was talking to him pretty consistently as well, like almost every day, going to each other's stores. And even though we're peers, he's still that older person or that older, male figure that has like a vast of knowledge, and just, you know, I'm almost like a sponge to that. Like, show me everything that you can, show me everything that I can kind of take in, because like you're parting this wisdom on me, and like a lot of my courage, and just, hey, let me open up this piece of equipment and see how it works and try to fix it. Like, it comes from him. So yeah, I mean, those are two, just for instance, for me that I latch onto, like right away, they just come to the top of my head.
Life. It can become so challenging. We are faced with so many pressures, obstacles, losses, and pain. Anxiety and depression seem to never cease. They ravage through us like a fierce disease. But with a little support, a spark is ignited. Hope spreads like fire. Spread Hope Like Fire is a 40-day motivational book that is targeted at helping you change your outlook on each day. Changing the way for which we take on our days so that we may rest easy at night. Pick up your copy today. Available now at Barnes & Noble, Amazon.com, and other online retailers.
Like, for me, I have a completely absent father. I learned what this, being disowned, I learned what that was at 6, because he was on a bender and decided that I screwed over. I don't even know what it was, but anyways, it's taking these tools that we have and we keep perpetuating it. The difference between you and I and what I see going on in the world, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I see a lot of unhappiness in the world, like just nonstop unhappiness, and everybody's attaching to these issues, which is great. You know, let's fix some issues and stuff, but we have to be able to fix things in a manner that's going to change things. And to me, I see us repeating the same cycles that we were handed down to us with parents, except those of us who are willing to look at the situation and say, okay, well, our price tag's getting raised because, you know, dad wasn't there and he kind of lied, or mom wasn't there and she kind of, or both parents lied. I mean, that's what I experienced too at the homeless shelter. There was children and it was like, no mom, no dad. They're being told this lie completely, that they're worthless and stuff. And so, do you realize that you're breaking the cycle?
For me, it's just at a very young age, it was always like, this is the hurt I have. This is what I'm missing. When it comes time for me to be a father or me to be a parent, it's gonna be different. Like, I don't want my kids to go through this. And that's the thing. Like, we as human beings, like, and I firmly believe this is a personal belief of mine. Like, we we're really just the result of mistakes and hard lessons learned and us trying to better ourselves from those mistakes or learn from those mistakes and make ourselves better, like continuously with anything. Like really, like us as human beings, like you're always trying to better yourself, whether it be professionally, personally, relationship wise, and you take what happened before, and some people may not, some people may continue the mistakes over and over again, but you know, we get hurt, we get that emotional breaking of ourselves, and we don't want to experience that anymore. So what do? We change it. And that's the beauty of kind of how I live my life is like, if I've made mistakes, like they're really like good lessons. And how do I go about not making them again with anything in life? And so for me, when I was younger, like I never felt like I belonged anywhere. It was, yes, I'm with my mom. I'm with her all the time. I have my stepdad, they had a family. I have, half sisters. Like I said, I grew up with, five sisters. I have half sisters. And then when I'm with my dad, it's another family. I have half sisters. And I'm the oldest out of everybody. So granted, wow. Yeah. And so like my mom and dad were high school sweethearts. They were never together. So really I'm the oldest of all of my siblings. And so it's like, okay, well, anywhere I go, there's going to be younger siblings that are going to be, there's more attention that's needed for younger siblings. Mm-hmm. That's just the case. That's how things are. Unfortunately, like with my 10-year-old son, he's good. He can make his own meals. He can fend for himself, get himself water. It's the girls that I have to go and constantly do things for. My younger girls who are 4, 5, and 6. So just being younger, so it's like, well, I don't like, I have half sisters here, half sisters there. Like, I don't belong anywhere really. Like I'm always kind of the odd person out, and not that they made me feel that way. There wasn't anything that my parents did. It's just an interpersonal kind of feeling where, I'm not like them. I'm not like my sisters on my mom's side. I'm not like my sisters on my dad's side. Like I'm just this person here that shares a common parent between all of them. And I'm just here. So right away from that, as a kid, like I set out to like, if I have a family, like I want to be there every day that I can be. Unfortunately right now, it's not the case with their mother. I'm in a sense, it's a bit of repeating the cycle, but one of the things, especially me being a father and looking back to, my dad's a really religious person, and the Lord is what took him to the Philippines. He didn't make the decision to go to the Philippines. At a really young age, personally, he made the decision not to be with my mom because he didn't want to be unhappy, and he didn't want to be like his father, cheating on my grandma, and just being a sleaze and doing that. He didn't want to be that type of role model for me. So he decided not to be with my mom. And so like with the Philippines, him leaving, like I understand, but that's nothing that I could ever do. Like I do believe in God. I do believe in the Lord. I am, a Christian, born again. I'm a very spiritual person as well. Like I know that there's a God, but and this is where like, I'm not as spiritually in tune. Like I could never move halfway across the world and leave my kids and not know what they're doing every day, not know like how they're doing every day. And like, that's something for me, like it was not necessarily that it was done to me, but I experienced that as a kid. And I know for a fact, like, especially me being a dad now, like I am not going to do that. I can't do that. Like, it's not like me and my kid's mom may not be together, but I am going to be living in the same city as them. I'm going to be seeing them every chance that I can get. I've got my days with them and I'm always asking for more. trying to finagle a way that I can get them more, because really like that's what I have. Like, it's what I have to live for. Like, I love being a father. Like I said earlier, like I feel like I was born to be a father. Like that's, if there's one thing that I as a kid, I didn't feel like I belonged to anything. I belonged, to taking care of people, and like, it's my kids. Like I took care of my mom as much as I could. I took care of my sisters as much as I could when they needed it. And now I'm taking care of my kids. Like, and I get to do that. Like it's it's something that I value above a lot of things. Like, my kids are my world, and I'll do anything I can to make them happy. I'll spoil them. Like, they're spoiled. again, because, you know, they have stuff that I didn't get a chance to have, but
yeah.
I mean, that's just it for me. Like, I recognized that at an early age and just knew that it was going to be different.
I think there's this inner, like, burning fire for us to be like a caregiver to a degree, because we didn't get, like, I don't know, I think it's kind of, to a degree, for me at least, I feel like, I think to a degree I'm overcompensating. Like, I didn't get all the things that a kid should get, like the nurturing, the love, the support, the safeness, all that. I was given all the opposite stuff, and it was like, I think that's what actually drew me into the field I went into, which is psychotherapy. And it's really good to see. And one of my main reasons I always do this, even doing the podcast, is I don't want somebody to feel the way I felt. Yeah. I don't want them to experience the hurt and think that they're in this alone, because a lot of the times that's what we do think. At least I did before I made the jump and go back and going back to school and stuff and learning. That's how I took it. Really. It was like, you know, I can't, it's weird. It's weird to break out of the cycle and then look in and say, oh wow, like, okay, we've broken the cycle to a degree. We can't fully break the cycle, because it takes a couple lifetimes to do that. And for you, like, for instance, like, okay, the separation or whatever, and it's like, okay, that may not have worked, but you're still present, you are still providing, you are still support, you're giving all those, the kids, the things that everyone should get. Otherwise you're stuck with a kid that people ask, well, what's wrong with you? And it's like, well, no, they're just hurting. And they might be 34, 40, 50, you know. I mean, I've had clients that a lot of stuff has happened to them, and they're just acting out, and they're scared. Yeah.
And really for me, like with my marriage, like you hit the nail on the head when you talk about caregiver, like, and for, like, for me, I always thought, like, well, my mom, like, I grew up with my mom being single and working, like, so hard to provide what she had to, like, and in my marriage, like, my ex, like, she didn't work. And, like, I took pride in that, because, hey, like, I make enough, like, to support us financially. Mm-hmm. I make enough to be able to do nice things, you know, go to Disneyland or do whatever. And I looked at that as something that I was proud of. But at the other, in the other, you know, on her side of things, like, it really led to a lot of resentment, because I had a life outside of home. Like, I had a social life from working. Mm-hmm. And so many years I'm thinking, like, man, like, I'm doing a really good job of being a husband, because, like, my wife doesn't have to work. Like, she can stay at home with the kids. Like, that's my mom's dream, you know, but my wife isn't my mom. You know, that's not something, you know, that she wanted, you know, even though my mom may have been like, oh, like, if I could just not have to work, or if I could just be here with you guys, or, you know, that growing up, you know, my mom, like I said, she worked really hard. So we've seen her less. So, you know, subconsciously I'm thinking, like, well, my kids get to have their mom. My kids get to have their mom at all times, every single moment of the day they can have her. And if she wants to work, well, like, I mean, anything that she works for, she's just going to have, we're going to have to pay in child care, you know? And mm-hmm. So I'm thinking, you know, the whole time, like, oh, I'm doing something really cool. And really I'm not, like, I'm hurting the relationship more than anything. Which is, you know, now that we're separated and we both work, I think, you know, she's a lot happier, and now's my mistake in our marriage, because I'm thinking, like, man, she's got it good, like, you know, she doesn't have to work at all. And, you know, and like I said, that led to resentment, and I completely understand that at this point now. And it takes, like I said, like, it takes that happening. Like, you know, when I met her, she didn't have a stable job, you know, so I took on that caregiver type of mentality or type of, you know, approach to our relationship. And, you know, I told her anything you need, anything you want, like I can provide that. I got you on that. And in turn, you know, it especially, it can be looked at as being controlling. Like, and I don't think I'm a controlling person, but, you know, she's like, well, I want to go and do this or do that. Like, okay, well, just let me know so I can give you money, or I can let you know, or I can request days off, or just let me know. And subconsciously, you know, I'm not knowing this, but that's really being controlling, because, well, you need to let me know so that I can prepare for you to go and do these things, in a sense, you know?
Yeah.
And I know that led to a lot of the problems that we had. And, you know, now that I'm on the other side of it, I can see that, but, you know, work on improving that type of thing. But
you just got to keep scaling up.
That's, yeah, exactly. Do. Yeah. Yeah. Like that's the biggest thing, is, you know, learn from our mistakes. You know, I mean, not to say that being with her was a mistake, but me thinking like, oh, like I got her, like I can take care of her all by myself. Like she doesn't need to do anything. She can just stay at home and be a mom. Like, it really did a lot more damage than it did, you know, helping out, in my mind. So
I want to thank you for sharing all that you did coming on the show and opening up. You're touching on a lot of points that are like poignant to the Family Matter series. I'm just taking it from Urkel, because Carl Winslow was another guy that I attached to. Like, seriously, it's weird. Like, growing up, a TV dad raised me. It was Uncle Phil. It was Uncle Phil. And it was like, yeah, I learned my morals and standards from these people. It was, who else raised me? Jack Tripper. I mean, he wasn't a dad, but it was like, I think that's where I got my comedic sense from. Yeah. Three's Company. Bill Cosby. At the time, we didn't know that he was Bill Cosby the rapist. Yeah. He was Bill Cosby the America's dad. But I mean, if you think about it, he was a gynecologist, so I mean, he gave it away, you know. he was totally telling us what he was up to. So, you know, sometimes at night with my insomnia, I could totally take a Cosby colada and pass out, and it'd be great. But there's a lot of aspects that go into a relationship, and you're bringing up great points that in later episodes I'm going to touch on, which is like the communication part. Something that I learned early on with like couples therapy and trying to fix my issues with myself is communication breaks down so easily. Like, we were learning our five love languages, and Shirelli, I think, wanted gas. No, her love language was acts of service. I put gas in her old hoopty. She had that old bug that I hated. I cleaned it and everything, and it was like, oh, well, thanks. And I was like, well, this is your act of service. Like, this is, it turned into a fight, because, like, this is bullshit. Like, I'm not doing this no more. This is not the reaction I wanted from you. Like, this is stupid. And it was like, that's not what her love language is. It's communicating as to what it is. Her acts of service would have been like a massage, or like giving her money to go to like the nail salon, something like that. And it's, the communication is so key. And a lot of people, I mean, even when I'm still learning and I'm a therapist, I screw up a lot of times in sessions where it's like the communication's off and we're not getting to the point. But you've shared a lot of things that I think are poignant to men in America. We hear a lot about the women in America, but I think the men in America too are hurting. The thing is, systemically, you zeroed in on it and you said it perfectly. Men aren't supposed to be this way, emotional wise. Like you even said, like, you and I are different because we are able to be more in tune with our emotions, share our emotions, be open about it. That's not normal in our society. Men are told to shut the hell up, suck it up, you know, walk it off and move on. And so it's nice to actually have the audience at home be able to know that it's okay. If you're a guy and you're listening, I know my demographic is not men. It's 89% female. So I mean, ladies, this is the aspect of which men are facing. We're not perfect, and we're not Hercules and everything, and we struggle with stuff, and just like everybody. So I love and I appreciate everything that you were able to share with us, and I want you to come back on the show.
For sure, man. Yeah, for sure.
It's been great. I mean, we could just chit chat or whatever. It doesn't have to be like deep topics. I do plan on, you know, doing like I need friends type of thing, or like outside interactions with people. It's crazy. Pandemic's just shut everything. It shut me down at least. And then it's, I don't know, but yeah, I want to thank you.
Yeah, man, no problem at all. It's been a pleasure. I mean, I'm very in tune with my emotions and things like this. Like I things that I talk about, sometimes it's hard, you know, when it comes to strangers, but this is, you know, it's a big deal. Like, I mean, I don't see this as me talking to strangers. I'm talking to you, and it's going out there for people to hopefully get some sort of help, or feel like they're not alone, or feel like, you know, that there's some hope as well. Like, I mean, that's the whole premise of your show is, you know, spreading hope like fire.
Hope like fire.
And I think now more than ever, when people are feeling that alone at the most, like, alone time that you can be, like where people are either at home or don't want to go out or have fear of going out, like it's a great way to reach those people.
Yeah, and I've heard in the previous post, but yeah, no, I mean,
okay,
really, if anything, like I'm a huge advocate for family, like, and having kids, and I know a lot of people our age that, you know, they have kids, or whether they're with somebody or not, like sometimes the kids aren't the focus. I know there's been instances where I felt like that as a kid, but you know, your kids are, you know, a lot of times you're God to them, you know, you're everything, mother, father, if you're single, and even when you're together, sometimes you got to be both. But if anything, really, I can plug is just, you know, your family is where it's at. And, you know, when I'm old, you know, they better take care of me the same way I'm taking care of them.
Yeah, definitely. Well, it's been nice. I thank you. And everybody, I'm planning on having Andrew back on. I think it would be a great perspective to see at least two guys talk about the challenges that we face with family, growing, sustaining our mental health. And it's just been great. So until next time, we will see you on the podcast. For Andrew and Tony the Beat, I'm Tony the Beat. Greatly thankful for everything, all the listening, all the support, all the outpouring. It's been great. I mean, the first podcast that I put out last week, it got a lot of response, and it warmed my heart to be able to interact with some of you guys again, and just getting emails or text messages from fans and friends, and just the listening fan base, the listeners. It makes me want to continue doing this even more. It's been a struggle during pandemic to keep this going, as many of you know, with the mental health aspect and everything that's going on with that. But I ask, just, you know, you don't have to join the Patreon, but I highly suggest, you know, help making that impactful step to changing other people's lives around us and spreading the joy. Let's focus on happiness, joy, love, compassion, empathy, all these things that are going to build us up to be a stronger society. So again, please go to Apple, leave a like, leave a review, tell your friends about us, share us on all your social media platforms. You can email me, tonythebeat85@gmail.com, if you have questions, if you want connections through for mental health. I can help point you in a couple right directions. And again, just, you know, like, shares, word of mouth helps. You don't have to monetarily support the podcast, but it's greatly appreciated. I love you guys. I missed you. It's been great doing the podcast, a video podcast at least. It's been fun being able to see people. And I think I knocked out about 6 of them this week. So just be prepared. I have John the Phenomenon coming on. I have Nestor Fraustos coming back on. And quite a few others that I have lined up. And Eddie Patino, my good friend Eddie from Target. We got some good stuff going on there. Well, I'm trying to get a CWA reunion with my wrestling family, the brotherhood I grew up with, trying to get my old Target crew back together. It's going to be fun. I think that's what we're going to encompass and take this next step of the journey is just, you know, exploring life together. And so for Tony the Beat, this is Spread Hope Like Fire.
Spread Hope Like Fire is a production of the Spread Hope Like Fire Foundation, a 501c3 nonprofit. As always, I like to remind everybody the things that we discuss upon the podcast are not a substitute or a replacement for seeking treatment and getting professional help. If in fact you are struggling with your mental health, we urge you to please reach out to your community and see which professionals are accepting new clients and get that professional help and talking to that professional that you need. This show is intended as a educational and informational psychoeducation of the field of psychology. For Spread Hope Like Fire and Anthony G, I'm Anthony G, and we will see you later.